The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939. This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Well, a flurry of executive orders coming out of Washington and new highs in the market only following by a correction. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to the Financial Sense News Hour. We're going to begin today's program with a special interview of Jim Bianco, a 45-minute interview you do not want to miss as we take a look at what's going on in the market. How did the masters of the universe lose billions of dollars with the little guy taking on Wall Street? A fascinating story coming up. Later on in the program, Bruce Fraser will be our technician. He's still positive on the market. He still thinks we've got a ways to go. And also, Keith Barron will be joining me as we take a look at base metals, everything from copper to zinc. Why are these metals going up? Well, it's all related to the green economy, and Keith will be here to talk about it. And of course, before we do that, let's head down to Wall Street with Ryan Poplava to talk about all the events, and there were plenty of them this week on Wall Street. Ryan?
Well, it's hard to hear about anything other than the short squeeze in GameStop this week and other heavily shorted stocks, but I tell you, the one fun thing about the week has been reading all the puns financial pundits have used to talk about it. When life gives you lemons, short squeeze them. Stockholders of GameStop need to stop playing games. AMC Theatrics. What gets shorted must go up. And one of my favorites, the citrus of Citron short squeeze on the lemon GME proved to be too sour. Okay, enough of that. But some truth there to the last one. Citron Research founder Andrew left, literally, on Friday. Said after 20 years of publishing Citron Research, we'll no longer publish short reports. He said, where we started, Citron was supposed to be against the establishment. We've actually become the establishment. If you don't know what a short squeeze is, a short squeeze happens when a sharp rise in the stock price forces investors who have borrowed shares and sold short to have to buy them back because they owe those shares back to obviously forestall an even greater loss as the price rises. This can also be caused by margin calls and even the Fed or brokerage houses raising margin requirements due to market volatility, which is what happened on Thursday. It can sort of add to the existing volatility. And then when they released or relaxed some of those rules, you know, the retail investors were bite back in buying crazy on GameStop on Friday. Later on, Jim will be focusing on this issue specifically with Jim Bianco. So please stay tuned for more. Jim and I have witnessed stock manipulation in my 26 years and Jim's 40, seeing firsthand naked shorting and more, especially back in the days of junior mining companies that had to go to these brokerage houses seeking capital. Hopefully from all of this, the SEC finally takes a stand to regulate shorts a little bit better to create the fair trading markets for all, but I won't hold my breath. I do want to say that the market has mechanisms in place that should correct themselves when the market gets too lopsided in one direction or another, too short or too long. For example, Jim has said many times how the popularity of trading index ETFs and their weighting mechanics have influenced share prices. Currently, we can see this very clear in the XRT retail ETF. With an equal-weighted mandate, how is it that GameStop was 19% of the fund just 2 days ago? Eventually, they'll rebalance. They do that, I believe, quarterly, and they'll likely have to drive down the weight of GameStop and other similar holdings back to, you know, what is a modified equal weight for them. In fact, at their last rebalancing, the 10th highest weighting in the fund was 0.287%. So do the math. Bloomberg had an article earlier this week that investors have pulled $700 million from the ETF, probably profit-taking. I know we were one such firm. Where I come is to tell you how this catalyst is affecting the market trend. Chris Poplava and I did a video on Monday where we highlighted some exuberance we were seeing in the market with high margin debt, put-to-call ratios that were lower than I've seen in a decade, and other breadth indicators that tell us the market is due to cool off. The VIX actually did just that on Wednesday with the market down 2% plus. The VIX jumped and skyrocketed up to around 37, and we've been seeing it usually about range-bound around 40. Anything greater than 40, well, we're back at March 2020. There's not any sell signals in themselves right now, but they are signs of increased risk if another catalyst tips the scales. And some are considering that the major short squeeze right now could be that tip. And so far, we've seen the market now pull in to the 50-day moving average for the S&P 500 on Friday. Well, so far, that, you know, as I said, that catalyst may be taking place. It appears that good news right now is failing to push these stocks higher. And I mean some of the mega caps. So definitely, it's time to be a little cautious. And the squeezing of shorts may be causing volatility in healthy trading stocks. One of the topics traders are discussing, and I'm reading a lot of research on, is that large investors are selling their profits in large cap companies to cover their shorts in others. Many mega cap stocks this week reported better than expected earnings, yet failed to rise. Apple hit north of $100 billion in quarterly sales for the first time ever and beat earnings by 27 cents. Apple failed to provide guidance, so the report was seen as an opportunity to book profits when the stock was down 3.5% after earnings. Microsoft beat earnings by 62 cents following a 46% beat last quarter. Microsoft did give guidance, reporting it sees healthy demand for PCs. Gaming should continue to show strength, which our GameStop investors should like. And then they have the release of their new console, and they see great comparables with its commercial bookings due to a lot of expirations that they're seeing. Stock closed up only 0.3% on phenomenal news. So some of the positive shareholder reactions were found in likes of Johnson & Johnson, which was up 2.7% Tuesday. GE was up 2.7% on their earnings, and 3M up 3.3%, while others disappointed, like Verizon down 3.2%, American Express down 4.1%, hurt by travel spending more so than its competitors are seeing. And other negative reactions on Friday include Visa down 2.5%, Honeywell down 3.8%, and Chevron down 4.3%. All these stocks have been benefiting well from infrastructure discussions, vaccine discussions, and, you know, the cut in oil production by Saudi Arabia. On the vaccine front, new news here. Novavax shares were up 64% on Friday with its vaccine candidate producing about 89.3% efficacy in phase 3 trials in the UK. And Moderna earlier this week said its vaccine does protect against the variants originating in the UK and South Africa. Definitely, that was, I was wondering about that. And Governor Newsom of California confirmed the stay-at-home order has been lifted. So, you know, Chris did a great job last Monday really focusing on COVID, looking at how the cases are going, death rates, et cetera, et cetera. So I highly recommend you take a look at that video if you're interested, because if we do have conditions improving right now, we should see these stay-at-home orders lift across the country and countries abroad. You know, a lot of that is still going on in Europe. So obviously something that's very good to see. And if you like the video, click like and subscribe so you know when the next video is out. You know, we post these on our YouTube channel. Without further ado, up next is the discussion on GameStop and shorting in general, naked shorts, manipulation, and more with Jim Poplava and Jim Bianco. Up next.
This week on FS Insider, Jim Poplava interviewed Charles Goodhart and Manoj Pradhan on their must-read book, The Great Demographic Reversal. They discuss how the multi-decade trend of lower inflation is now in the process of reversing, and that it may be reversing actually even quicker than what most people anticipate for a variety of reasons. Here's a clip of what they had to tell listeners on FS Insider this week.
Our book focuses on the underlying reason why this disinflationary trend has occurred, and indeed since the great financial crisis of 2008-09, although central banks have thrown everything they could at trying to raise inflation back to target, they haven't been able to do so. And we argue that the two main forces that have led to this continuous disinflation have been globalization and also demographic forces. And the point that we're making is that both these trends are going to reverse and are currently reversing quite sharply.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
If you're seeking financial advice and how to invest in today's markets, Financial Sense Wealth Management can help. From setting up or providing advice on 401k plans, managing corporate cash balances in a zero interest rate environment, to helping individuals, foundations, and businesses achieve their financial goals. Give Financial Sense Wealth Management a call today at 888-486-3939. Let us work together to help you get on the path to success. Call now at 888-486-3939. Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow at financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Joining me on the program is Jim Bianco from Bianco Research. Jim, I wonder if we could begin and just give us kind of a synopsis. What happened with GameStop? Why is everybody on cable news talking about this?
Let's start with the basics here. GameStop is a brick and mortar retailer that sells video games. This is the online world. This is the work from home world. It's not a good business to be in. It's got troubled finances. And there's been talk about it possibly going bankrupt. So it's a troubled company. Wall Street has figured out that this company's got problems, and they've been shorting the stock. That is a bet that the stock will fall and maybe even one day go into bankruptcy. A short sale is where you sell the stock before, it's buy low, sell high in reverse. You sell the stock first. You're supposed to borrow the stock from somebody else and make delivery on it. But what happened with GameStop is it has 50 million shares outstanding. And as of today, it has 61 million shares that have been bet that the price is going to fall, more than the shares outstanding. Now, that's down from 75 million shares a couple of weeks ago, but it's still larger than the entire float of the company. What's amazed me is that nobody on Wall Street noticed this or thought this was any big deal. And then Citron Research put out a sell report. Now, let me make a quick editorial comment about Citron Research. It's like one of these firms, like Muddy Waters is the other name you'll hear. And it's usually the case that these hedge funds, they get together probably in a very expensive restaurant in Midtown Manhattan or out in the Hamptons. And they have a, quote, ideas dinner. And that's just 10 hedge fund guys or 8 hedge fund guys sitting around deciding what they want to do. And I'm speaking theoretically here, not in this exact instance. And they all decided, and I'm speaking theoretically, let's all go short GameStop, all right? So they got this gigantic short on GameStop that's larger than the float outstanding, which I might add is illegal. It's called a naked short. You're not allowed to do that. You have to make delivery. The number of shares of a company is supposed to be dictated by the company itself. It cannot be dictated by people artificially creating or destroying shares by selling something they don't have. This was the problem in 1929. The SEC was invented in 1933 precisely for this reason. And here we are 80 years later, 90 years later, and they are not doing their job, and the same thing happened again. So these companies get together. They sell way too much of this stock, and then they hire a firm called Citron Research. Again, this is just all supposition, or if you're not sure, you can watch all season 4 of the Showtime show Billions, because this is exactly what the season was about. And they hire these guys to write a report about why GameStop's in trouble and go out and badmouth the company and the stock fall. Well, over on Reddit forum, Wall Street Bets, bunch of people there have noticed that, hey, this company might not be as bad as they think it is. Now, no one says it's good, but it might not be as bad as they think it is. They just hired the president of Chewy. Ryan Cohen is his name, and he's got a good reputation, and maybe he could turn it around. And look at here. They've actually shorted more than the shares outstanding. They're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to a short squeeze. And then when this Citron report came out, that was kind of the trigger that got everybody saying, this is it. It's time to go now. Let's all buy this stock and let's create a short squeeze. And that's exactly what they did. The price of the stock started to soar because they knew that margin calls were going to come. If they had to buy the stock, They would never be able to find it to make delivery. It was going to go up and up and up. Melvin Capital eventually had trouble. They needed to be bailed out by other Wall Street firms, and the losses just kept piling on. The thing about this story is this is all out in the open. You know, people like to say that Wall Street is unbridled capitalism. There's no honor among thieves. Did Goldman Sachs, just to throw out a name, did Goldman Sachs see this happening? I'm sure they did. Why didn't Goldman Sachs think, hey, we could stick it to these guys, drive the stock up, and make ourselves a lot of money? Why didn't they do it? Or some other big hedge fund or something? Maybe they're all in this together. They're all doing this. They all do the same thing. They operate by their own set of rules is what happens. And we've seen this over and over again. Why, when Melvin Capital runs into trouble, do other hedge funds immediately bail them out? They're all in the same trade together is what happens. So it took an outsider to basically come in and upset the apple cart. Before this week, they used to think, yeah, we run by our own rules and the regulators don't look, the regulators we've got in our hip pocket, no problem with them. And there's nobody out there that's big enough to take us on. Well, now there is. It's retail investors using social media, moving in mass. It did not start this week. We saw this as early as in the spring when Buffett sold his airlines and said, I wish them well. And they all ran into the airlines and doubled the price of the airlines in a month. When they bought the work from home stocks, when they ran Tesla up to $700 and everybody was going, how can Tesla get so high? And eventually it made it into the S&P 500 last month. So they've been doing this, they being this massive retail for months, and they've been winning for months as well too. So the basic fundamental with GameStop is simple. 61 million shares are short. That's not allowed. That's against the rules. But apparently they got away with it. No one looked the otherwise. That leaves the shorts in that company unbelievably vulnerable to a squeeze. But no other professional investor thought to stick it to them. It took a bunch of retail investors who figured this out on their own, that there was a vulnerability here that they could attack and make some money. And that's exactly what they did. And you could see this along the way. Tuesday night, the server company of Reddit tried to shut down Wall Street Bets, and they put out a press release that was identical to the Trump press release, that there was hate language on the website, and then, you know, and everything's hate language that they don't like. That word has no meaning anymore. But in this case, it only lasted an hour, and they were forced to come back. Yesterday, we're talking on Friday the 29th. They tried to shut down trading in all of the, in all of these companies at the brokerage firms, and some of the brokerage firms, Robinhood and Noah, was actually going into people's accounts with long positions in profit and forcibly liquidating some of those people as well too. The cry came up, the screaming came up. Rarely will you ever see AOC and Ted Cruz agree on something, but they both agreed that this was wrong. They relented on that today. And now we see all of these short stocks soaring again, and we see the market falling. Why is the market falling? Because it's afraid of a contagion. Now, let me be clear on my words here. We don't have a contagion right now. We may not get one, but we have. But the story's not over. We don't know how high these short stocks are going to go, how big a loss everybody's going to take, how many people are going to miss margin calls at the brokerage firms, if any, that might impair the brokerage firms. So the further these short stocks go up, the more we start to worry that this could lead to a contagion that could affect the larger financial system. You could see it in the way that the brokerage stocks like the Schwab's, the Morgan Stanley's, the Interactive Brokers, their stocks are getting killed here relative to the market itself. Schwab's down 15% this week, that stock alone. As well. So that's what the problem here is. These hedge funds, these masters of the universe, made a structural mistake in the way that they positioned on this company. And everybody says it's a $5 company. Why is it trading at 35, 350? 61 million shares short, 50 million shares available. That is impossible to fix. That's why the price is doing what it's doing. And until that short goes away, it might continue to go higher.
They've been doing this for decades. I was involved with a company that the very same thing happened. I went to the authorities. Instead of the authorities looking into it, I gave them all kinds of evidence of what was going on. Instead, they treated me the way they treated Harry Markopoulos. So let's talk about what I think is happening, and you pointed it out in one of your webinars, and that is they've been doing this for a long time. The SEC doesn't do anything. FINRA doesn't do anything, and they got away with it. Let's talk about why they didn't get away with it. And you talked about a couple things that have happened. Technology, as you mentioned, you can sit in a Starbucks today with a smartphone, and you've got the exact technology or the equivalent of the technology that was in trading rooms in 1987. We've gone to commission-free, and I want to come back to that, and fractional shares. And on top of that, with the pandemic, people are sitting at home and the government's mailing them checks. What do you do? Interest rates are at zero. So let's talk about how the little guy kind of came in here and is now a very dominant player in the options market and, you know, basically handed the hedge funds their head on a platter.
Yeah. To the first part of what you asked about, how can they do this? And they've been doing this for decades. The SEC has long not really enforced their short rules as strenuously as they should. They allow this naked shorting. Sell something you don't have. You know, in the regular world, Jim, if I try to sell you something and take payment for it and then don't deliver you the product, you know, I go to jail. But on Wall Street, if I sell you some stocks and you pay me for those stocks and I don't deliver you the stocks, oh, that's just a fail to deliver. We'll see if you've got the stocks tomorrow to deliver to me. And they just keep rolling it and rolling it and rolling it. This game has been going on forever. One of the reasons that they've been able to get away with it is, other than in small, isolated instances, no one really attacks the big players that do it and expose the weaknesses of the big players. They're all holding hands in it together. And it took this new set of retail investors to band together and do it. Now, how did they do it? Some of the things you've pointed out, today, the amount of technology you have in your hand on your phone is we take it for granted, but we forget where we are. I have an iPhone 11. Apparently, I have more technology in my one iPhone than the entire planet did in 1970. The entire planet. And we still landed men on the moon, remembering that as well, too. And there's 1 billion of these smartphones on the planet. As you pointed out, I've said, when I'm sitting in a Starbucks with my laptop connected to the internet, I have all the horsepower of the institutional desk that I started on in 1987. And I have access to everything that all the top analysts in the world had in 1987. And so do you, and so does everybody else. And it's all probably free. Okay, so retail investors now have the information that institutional investors have, but they don't have the cost advantage. Well, in 2019, commissions across the board were cut to zero. So now that cost advantage that an institutional investor went away with. Well, the institutional investor has a size advantage. Well, starting last year, they then started to allow fractional shares. You like Amazon at $3,300, but you don't have $3,300? You could buy a tenth of it for $330 and zero commission. So now the advantage of size has now gone away as well too. Okay, so now you've given me the information, no cost, no advantage on size, but I don't have any money. Well, don't worry about that. The pandemic is taking care of that. The government mailed you money is what they did. First, a $1,200 check, an extra $600 in unemployment, various other bailout packages. Then a $900 billion package was passed in December, and we mailed $600 checks. Now we're talking about a $1.9 trillion package. We're going to mail $1,400 checks to everybody. Well, when you got that money, it was the middle of the pandemic. Everything was shut down. You weren't ready to go use it for a vacation or buy a car or spend it, because you didn't know what your personal finances were going to leave. So you saved it. And part of that savings was you opened up a brokerage account. Well, what am I supposed to do with this brokerage account? You wandered over to social media because you're sitting at home in your sweats and you got nothing else to do. And you start logging on to these sites like Reddit and Twitter in the FinTwit hashtag. And I've been in this business 33 years. And I'll tell you, if you go on these sites, there are some people that really know what they're talking about. There are other people that have no idea what they're saying. But there are some very, very, very smart people that are making very intelligent arguments out there. Once you start getting the hang of it, we all start moving around as a community and we start winning. Like I said, you know, you won with the airlines, then you won with Tesla, you won with the work from home stocks. And then some people started pointing out the vulnerability of these short sellers that has been vulnerable for decades and decades, but nobody wants to stick it to them. Oh yeah, you're right. Maybe some small over-the-counter stock here or there will do it to them once in a while, because that's not a systemic event, but we'll never go after the big boys in these big shorts and these orchestrated campaigns that they have. And since no one else was going to do it, now all of a sudden what the institutional investors missed is this whole new massive player, collectively this retail investor that has been moving back and forth in the marketplace as well too. And they're the ones that have jumped on it. So that's the confluence of events that have come to it. And the reason I went through all that, two things can be true at once. There's been this massive move towards do-it-yourself with retail, and they've been winning. And that's not going to go away. I don't think, yeah, the other thing that can be true at the same time is maybe the market is showing some serious signs of froth and is vulnerable to selling off or having another stiff correction. That could happen, but that doesn't mean that everybody's going to delete their account from Reddit and go away and everybody's going to stop by investing stocks and they're going to go and say, oh, I'm sorry, I'll just go buy the S&P ETF and call it a day or something like that. This will continue as we move forward. It will change. It will go in other firms. It won't be as aggressive, but it will continue, I think.
Yeah, the interesting thing is when they shut down retail investors for a day until the protests mounted, there was a surge of people on all the financial stations basically saying, this is risky. You've got the little guy in the market. He doesn't know what he's doing. And we need to stop this to protect them because they don't understand what they're doing when really they're trying to protect their own short position.
That frosts me when I hear that every time. I find it nothing short of sickening. Last I checked, the little guy buried Gabe Plotkin and Melvin Capital, one of the biggest and most well-respected hedge funds. You want to know how well-respected Gabe Plotkin is? He lost all his clients' money, and two other hedge funds gave him $2 billion. The little guy just buried that guy this week. The little guy made Buffett look foolish for selling his airlines in the spring. The little guy made everybody who thought that Tesla was a bubble look foolish by running it up to $700 and getting it into the S&P. They didn't get it in the S&P 500, but the run-up forced the index company to put it into the S&P 500. They win, and they win, and they win. I agree. One day, they'll stop winning. But for now, they're not the problem. The problem is the institutional investor misjudged. It's not the problem that the retail investor misjudged. And we're seeing this. D1 Capital, a big hedge fund, said they lost 20% this week. Point72, run by Steve Cohen, who's the owner of the New York Mets, said he lost up to 15% this week. You know, Maple Lane, another big hedge fund, said that they've lost 20 or up to 33% this week. These are all big shorters in this market. That's not retail that's been losing this money. That is the ultimate of professional investors. So yeah, eventually there will be a comeuppance. But right now, the bigger concern is that the masters of the universe are losing. Yesterday's headline, I tweeted this out yesterday. I never thought I would ever see a gigantic headline you could practically see from space in the Wall Street Journal that said individual investors rout hedge funds. And that's exactly what the headline said. That's exactly what's been happening. So we should all be as stupid as these individual investors are, because the last time I checked, they're taking out the smartest players on Wall Street right now, not the other way around.
Every administration or anybody running for public office, Republican, Democrat, they all bash Wall Street. Oh, we're going to end carried interest. We're going to reform it. They never do. because one thing that these big billionaire hedge funds have is a lot of money, and they give it to both parties, so they're protected. So I guess you're seeing the markets in some way work where you have the markets correcting something that the government isn't correcting itself by what they did to these hedge funds.
Yeah, it's exactly what I think is happening. Because remember, what they're doing is they saw a vulnerability. If these hedge funds were shorting within the parameters and borrowing the shares and doing everything up to what the limits of the market could tolerate, then there would be no opportunity to have a short run on, to have a big short squeeze on them like we have right now. But they left themselves vulnerable and they were arrogant enough to think, well, no one's going to do anything about this. No one's big enough to do anything about this. And you're right. This is healthy in that it is a corrective thing in the marketplace that could help along the way. We've got a lot of other problems that we have to fix. You mentioned, interest carried, that if you're a hedge fund, you get to have carried interest, and that much lowers your tax rate. As we were talking before we went on, Financial Sense doesn't have that benefit. Bianco Research doesn't have that benefit. But I'll guess Financial Sense is like me. I haven't given tens of millions of dollars to presidential campaigns. And so therefore, I don't get a special tax deal that everybody else gets. These are the types of things that ultimately have to be corrected to make the playing field fair. So maybe what we're doing here is making the playing field fair. As I want to emphasize, two things can be true at once. These people are not as irrational as we think they are. And good for them for what they're doing, and they're helping to make the system fair. But that doesn't mean anything about whether or not the market is overvalued or undervalued. That's a whole separate argument. And I don't think people should try and lump these two together as far as what they're trying to do with that, because that could be a little bit of a mistake.
You mentioned earlier there was a possibility of a contagion. I mean, as you mentioned, there's 61 million shares sold short, and the company only has 50 million shares. How are you going to deliver 61 million shares?
You can't. And that's why I've been very careful in my words. There isn't a contagion now. So as we close the week on January 29th, the financial system is sound. There's no problem with it. The problem is it's not over. And we don't know where it's going to go Monday and all of next week. Maybe this is the peak, maybe the peak is ahead of us. But if they are forced to have to make do on 61 million shares short, then the way Wall Street works is the price could literally go to infinity at that point. Because if you demand your shares, they have to pay any price in the market to get those shares to make that delivery. And so that's what makes this so scary. There's an old joke about the window washer that falls off the 10th floor scaffolding. And what does he say as he passes the third floor? So far, so good. And that's kind of where we are right now in this thing. We've passed the third floor and we're saying so far, so good. All right, well, you tell me after we hit the pavement how bad this is going to be. Maybe it's not so bad when we hit the pavement, or maybe it's just going to be very ugly. That's the concern. Where does this end? It is not over as we are talking right now. That is why the markets are so skittish in the way they trade. And the brokerage stocks are afraid that some of these short sellers, these hedge funds, will get margin calls they can't meet. The brokerage firm will have to cover that margin call. Brokerage firms are highly levered entities. They don't have enough capital if there's enough margin calls to meet it. And then if the brokerage firm has a problem, if one of the major brokerage firms has a problem, every major brokerage firm has a problem. That's the contagion. Sound a little like 08 as well too. So here's the issue that has everybody concerned. Well, we tried to shut this down yesterday, but the populist anger forced them to start trading these companies. They tried to shut down Wall Street Bets on Tuesday, but the populist anger got them to reopen it one more time. I think the only way out of this is the masters of the universe have to get together and just decide that we are going to all collectively close our positions now and just take a massive loss right now and move on. But I think it's more ego than anything else. I'll be damned if I'm going to let some guy named Roaring Kitty on a website Barry, one of the most celebrated hedge funds in the world. And so they're going to fight this, or maybe it's greed. Boy, there's going to be a big payday when these stocks collapse on the other side. So we got to hold on to these shorts and we just got to ride this out, because when the collapse comes, we're going to make all of our losses back. One, maybe it's a little bit of both of those, but at some point, the concern is, again, there is no problem tonight, but it ain't over. And I don't know if it goes to the problem point or it comes up short of that problem point, but no one else knows either. And that's why the markets are trading the way they are.
Well, let's carry this a little bit further. Let's just assume that GameStop is just one of many, and this continues to the point where a lot of these hedge funds really get themselves into financial trouble, where it may necessitate the Fed stepping in a bailout. I just don't think that's going to go over well with the public, bailing out these masters of the universe who are multi-billionaires for a bad bet they made.
Right. And it isn't just GameStop. I mean, you know, some of the other names, Bed Bath & Beyond, BlackBerry, Tootsie Roll. Remember Tootsie Rolls?
Oh, they're yeah.
They're going up too as well. American Airlines stock doubled yesterday at one point. What do all of these companies have in common? They're all financially troubled. They all have gigantic shorts on a bet that these companies are going to go down. And they've all been put into a vulnerable position so that when people start rallying these stocks and creating the margin calls against the short sellers, they go back up. So that's, I mean, Dillard's is another one as well, too. There's a lot of these companies that are in this camp that you're starting to see rallying. And that is a real concern, because people have correctly pointed out, what if this gets so bad that the Fed steps in and bails them out? Okay, let's flip that on the head. What if on Monday or Tuesday, the hedge funds gang up and they crush all of these stocks and they go down 80 or 90% next week, and all the retail investors get taken to the cleaners next week? Where's the Fed bailout for that? Is there going to be a Fed bailout for that? And a lot of these people know they ain't bailing me out if I'm wrong on this trade, but they will bail out the financial system if we squeeze them too hard. So they got to be very careful with this bailout. You know, it's funny. I said this to you offline and I'll say it here, because it works. January's been a strange month, because we started the month with an assault on the Capitol and we're ending the month with an assault on Capitol, it seems like. And we thought 2020 was the weird year. Boy, 2021 is really starting off, as a doozy. And it's only January right now.
So when you think about all of this that's going on, there's cries that there needs to be legislation. And I'm just a little bit of a skeptic watching the way Wall Street works with Washington, where money flows from Wall Street to Washington, influencing regulation. What are the chances, Jim, that, you know, we do get regulation, they step in, but the regulation is really geared towards the little guy and protects the big guy? That's what I'm afraid of.
Look, let me give you a history. 2000, we had a bubble peak. And during the 2000 bubble peak, we had online trading going crazy, kind of like we have now, but this is much, much bigger than that. In 2002, the SEC brought charges against a stock manipulator. It was a 15-year-old high school student from New Jersey named Jonathan Ledbetter, who they said ran home from school after he got done with his calculus class in junior year and was manipulating the entire stock market online from his bedroom. Really, SEC? I'm supposed to believe one 15-year-old kid in New Jersey is the reason that we had the tech bubble in 2000? In 2010, we had the flash crash. The stock market fell 1,000 points in like 5 minutes. That was what the flash crash was. A couple of years later, the Department of Justice brought a charge against a guy who was unemployed and lived with his mom, saying that he was in the basement on his computer and he caused the flash crash. I am not making this up. They charged one unemployed guy living with his mom for causing the flash crash. Boy, that guy should be the chairman of Goldman Sachs, because they got 1,000 guys from Ivy League schools at that institution, and none of those guys could pull that off, but he can. So yeah, that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to find little people, and they're going to blame them for it. They did it for the last two, and they're going to say that the regulation needs to come down on the online chat rooms. It doesn't need to come down on the short sellers or anybody else that's been abusing the system to their favor, because the mistake that they think is that somebody from the outside took advantage of an improperly positioned trade that a bunch of insiders took. The wrong people made money here. And that's what is really detestable for the quote insiders.
You know, I could almost see this playing out this way, Jim, because, you know, we've seen some of the big social media companies censor people. And part of this technology with these traders works through social media. You know, you read something on Facebook, you read something on Twitter, and then all of a sudden you've got this kind of mass movement that is created with social media. What about the idea that, you know, maybe the tech guys just come in and start regulating this on Twitter, Facebook, and elsewhere?
They've tried. They tried on Tuesday, and no doubt they'll continue to try. There's been allegations that what this is a pump and dump scheme or market manipulation. Market manipulation is a technical legal term. And one of the key tenets of market manipulation is it has to be kind of done in the shadows by a bunch of people illicitly. When you post online for anybody in the world to see, hey, let's all get together and buy GameStop because there's a big short and we could squeeze the shorts. And let's all start doing it this week. So everybody join me and start selling start buying this stock to get to the short sellers. That's not market manipulation. That's me expressing my opinion. And it doesn't fit the definition of pump and dump either. Like I said, they'll look to try and regulate that stuff. But the problem was the masters of the universe left themselves vulnerable and somebody noticed and took advantage of it. They won't sanction them, but they will sanction the people that took advantage of it.
What could bring this to a stop? Would it be a contagion or would it be a movement by the government to go against the little guy?
Usually a trend in a market will continue until something changes. So this trend, and I'm not talking about the short seller trend, I'm talking about the larger trend of the let's talk about the larger trend since the spring, that the market has been rallying on this idea that the contagion is going to come to an end and there's going to be a giant burst of activity on the back end of this. I've been fond this week of reminding everybody that every trend on Wall Street starts off as a very rational and not debatable idea, and then it gets taken to its ridiculous extreme. So the idea that the pandemic will end, there will be vaccines, and there will be a big burst of activity on the other side, that's not debatable. That is absolutely not debatable. What is debatable is the valuations in the market right now are suggesting what about that other side? It's going to be the roaring 20s for another decade. It's going to be spectacular growth, and it's going to be just blowing the top off. Now, for that to happen, everything has to go right for that to happen. If anything goes wrong in that story, markets get overheated, there's problems there, the vaccine isn't effective as we think there is, there's a mutation that comes to the country, or the reopening doesn't go as we think. Maybe after sitting at home a year, I'm just speculating here, people kind of like doing this a couple of 3 days a week. They don't want to go back to the office 5 days a week. And that changes a lot of the way that the economy is structured. Our economy is structured that the majority of people go to some place called work for 40 hours a week, 8 hours a day for 5 days, some more, some less. Our economy is not structured that a bunch of people stay at home 2 or 3 days a week. We don't spend as much money when we stay at home. We're not as economically active. And so if that's what comes out of this, the vaccine works, the economy reopens and everything else, that could be a problem too. When a market is this overvalued, it's not a timing tool. Doesn't mean that the market has to peak. People have asked me, do you see similarities to 2000? And I say, yes. And I see similarities to 99. And what I mean by that is when I say that it looks a lot like 2000, everybody thinks, okay, so today's March 9th of 2000 because March 10th was the high. No, it could be January 99. That had similar types of valuations too. And the market ran another 15 months and the NASDAQ went up another 90% before it peaked. Or it could be March of 2000. I don't know where we are in that mix, but I do know that when the market is priced like this, like it was in 2000, everything has to go right in order for it to work. It did for about 15 months in 99 and early 2000. And then it started not going right. And then we started to have some real problems in the marketplace after that. So that could happen as well, too, that we've gotten this market so far ahead of itself. And yeah, it might be some of the retail mania that's pushed it. But if the market corrects hard, that doesn't mean the retail mania goes away. In other words, what I'm trying to say is we're not going to go back to the olden days. We're going to keep moving forward as we go from here. And that's what I think people need to understand, that this new type of trading and this new type of empowerment that the public has is going to stay. It might change if we get a major peak in the market, but it won't disappear.
You know, I want to bring up something that you and I were talking on before we went on the air, and we're seeing this kind of like a, at least from our perspective, like a roaring 20s environment. Jim, it almost seems like every 100 years, you think of 1720, the South Sea bubble, you think of 1820, you think of the 1920s, and here we are 100 years later, almost in a similar environment. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, they always say that there's nothing new under the sun. You know, you mentioned the 1720, the South Seas bubble, the South Seas Corporation. Boy, there's a lot of similarities to this. It was another big bubble stock that just ran up, became worth more than all the other stocks on the French stock exchange. And a lot of what was powering that was anger at the French government. And people were looking at the South Seas Corporation as a way to strike back at the French government because it was a bit outside of the French government's reach. And so there was like a populist kind of undertow with that too. Sound familiar to this week as well? So that was 300 years ago. So this is not, you know, what's happening. Everything that's happened has its own twist and its own nuance. But this idea that the public has this anger to themselves and this populist movement, this is not the first time it's happened. Now, I will say, usually when you get a bubble like 2000, usually the bubble is on the back of people being true believers about the future. Oh, you got to own these companies because they're the leading way that these companies are going to go. That was the work from home thing, and that might be Tesla, where people are buying that, that it's going to change the world for the better. This is got, especially because it's just a short squeeze. At the end of the day, it's a short squeeze on a bunch of crappy companies. It's got a bit of an FU to a bunch of people, and that's why they're doing it. The South Seas bubble shows that's kind of happened in the past, but boy, it's really rare to see that kind of a movement or that kind of a motivation to drive something like this. I jokingly said, man, if they're this angry when they're making money, what happens when they start losing money at this bad point? So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, and then ultimately, if this ends badly, which usually what happens when you get these kind of events, you've got a cry to do something about it. So politicians will beat their chests and they're saying we've commissioned a blue ribbon panel to look into this, and they come up with regulation to fix it. But as you and I know, that regulation is going to fix it for the masters of the universe, not the little guy. Well, listen, Jim, I appreciate you coming on the program. I was going through your webinar, and I just love the way you get into the weeds and lay this out. A lot of great information. If our listeners would like to find out more about Bianco Research, tell them how they could do so.
Two easy ways. You could go to my website, biancoresearch.com, or go to my Twitter handle, @BiancoResearch. You know, I'm active on Twitter, and you can request more information through our website.
Well, in my opinion, some of the best research in the business, Jim. Thanks so much for coming on the program. Stay safe and come back again. Joining us from Wyckoff Trading is Bruce Frazier. Hey, Bruce, just before we begin, maybe you could help me out. I bought GameStop at $500 this morning on a breakout. Now it's down to $150. What the hell happened?
Well, Jim, you went on a coffee break, and that was a big mistake. Just hang on for a while. The day's not over.
Okay. Well, on a serious note, Bruce, you sent us a lot of charts, which we're going to make available for our listeners. Let's begin with the first one, which is the NASDAQ. You've got it in a strong uptrend, and now we've got another uptrend going, and it's breaking out. So what is this telling you about it?
This chart, which you'll be able to see by downloading it later, is a chart that goes back to 1978, and it shows three IPO booms. Now, these actually were three IPO booms that I have participated in my career. And in each case, when that boom ended, it was the conclusion of a very important long-term uptrend in growth stocks, as measured by the NASDAQ composite. We are in an IPO boom now. And of course, the thing here is that when does it end? And we don't think it's over yet. But when it's over, as portfolio managers or individual investors, we're going to want to think in terms of rotation into other areas of the market. And because once these growth stocks start to outperform, they tend to do so for about 8 to 10 years.
So in a cycle that goes as long as this has, and a lot of people are saying that a lot of these technology stocks are in a bubble. You take a look at some of the price multiples on Amazon or a Tesla or a Netflix. But despite all that, these companies are growing. Apple just announced probably the first time they hit over $100 billion in revenues in a quarter. They're making an incredible amount of money. So unlike the, let's say, bursting of the tech bubble, where a lot of those companies didn't have any profits, you take a look at some of these companies, whether it's Microsoft firing on all cylinders, Apple doing the same, these are super growth stocks.
No doubt about it. And for the time being, I would continue to expect that these stocks are dynamic. We're in a period in the economy that's going to, I think, continue to be strong in 2021. And these companies will continue to fire on all cylinders. So the thing that I believe the IPO boom tells us is that there's intense speculation on a macro level, and that it may not be as difficult for these big FANG stocks, which have huge cash flow and are well run, but it could have an effect downstream in the smaller stocks that are more speculative. But for now, we don't see big warning signs. We see little warning signs. The thing that's so interesting about now versus, say, a year ago is how much today, at the end of January 2021, it looks like 2020. And so we're seeing a lot of speculation. Prices are attempting to push up, lots of divergences internally, breadth divergences, and so on. And there's intense speculation, as there was back then. But we think this time, because of the sheer magnitude of liquidity that's being poured into financial markets literally around the world, we think that there's going to be a far different outcome 2021 than there was in 2020. But that doesn't mean we couldn't have a little correction or some sideways trading that could occur on an upward path.
So you have another chart here, and let's explain this. And this is the put-to-call ratio. Explain what's going on here.
We had record put-call readings, put-call volumes a year ago, January, February, before the big decline into March. Well, it's even more extreme today than it was then. And I just saw that the option volume hit huge volume records yesterday. And so this is a measure of intense speculation in markets. We think that the markets are going to need to cool their jets and calm down for a little while. And we don't know that it has to be a long time, but we believe that the markets are ready for a rest.
Now, you have another one, which looks at presidential elections. and you've got 1960, 1980, 2000. What are these charts telling you about where we are today in 2021?
Oh, you know, Jim, this is such an interesting chart. I did a show back in November on the elections, or October, in October. And so I did some research back and looked at these prior periods. And I'm a big believer in these big sort of decennial cycles, 10-year cycles, beginning with the zero year of the decade up to the ninth year. So I went back and I looked at the last three election cycles where we had the presidential election in a zero year. This was 60, 80, and 2000. And interestingly, in each case, the president-elect that was elected at the end of the zero year was from a new president from a new party. John F. Kennedy in 1960, Ronald Reagan in 1980, and then George W. Bush in 2000. And in each of those cases, it was a big surprise for the incumbent party, so to speak, to lose and to have a new party and a new president come in. Now, what's interesting about that is if we look at the decennial pattern, the tendency in the 10-year cycle is for recession years to come early in the decade. So that'd be the 0 year, the 1 year, the 2 year, and maybe the 3 year. And so here we are going into the 2021. Now we have an election in 2020. We had a new president from a new party. And so, and this replaced the incumbent party. So here we are with the same situation we had in the prior three examples we just talked about. And in each of the prior cases, we had a classic cyclic recession in the economy and in stock prices into the 2 or the 3 year of the cycle. And then a big booming new bull market came out of those lows. And so from around the 2 year to the 7 year, big growth in stock prices. And so I'm just using that sort of as a model. I'm not necessarily predicting it has to go that way, but I am looking for the first half of 2021 to be an up period for the stock market, but up mildly, and maybe with a lot, much like a trading range, into the middle part of the year. And then I think we're going to have a much better idea whether the market is setting up for distribution to go down into 2022 and then start the cycle anew.
All right. Another chart that you have that's been driving commodity prices and other asset classes, and that's the U.S. dollar. It's been in a downtrend. You've got a chart of the dollar where it's overbought and where it's oversold. So where are we with the dollar? And is it possible we've begun, let's say, a new long cyclical bear market for the dollar like we did at the beginning of the 00 decade?
I think that's definitely possible. Now, when people look at this chart, this is a big wide trend channel of gently rising prices for the dollar since 2013, 2014. Now the dollar has declined all the way in 2020, all the way down to the bottom of that channel. And we also do this arcane old method of price objective estimates where we do what's called horizontal point and figure counting. And this is like hundreds of years old of a technique. And that technique showed the dollar declining down to about the level that it's at now. And so I'm expecting the dollar is going to consolidate here and maybe have a bit of a rally. After that, I have bigger downward counts in the point figure technique that show the dollar even going down further. And that makes a lot of sense considering the amount of liquidity that's being pumped into the economy via monetary policy and fiscal policy.
And I guess a related question, let's talk about what's going on in precious metals or even base metals. If you look at the breakout in copper, you look at essential minerals for a green economy, copper, lead, silver, and then, of course, gold itself. So let's talk about the precious metals and the commodity sector for a bit.
Well, there's no question that there is upward pressure on these all of these different segments of the materials market. And higher prices, I think, are ahead. As a matter of fact, I wrote a blog about a year ago, and it's available for free at stockcharts.com, on the lithium craze. And lithium has built a gigantic base with a huge point and figure count potential. And now it has jumped into a screaming uptrend. And we're seeing that in other areas of the market. Silver is having a particularly good day today even, and is starting to jump out of its near-term base. But I have count objectives. So for instance, in gold, I have a count in gold that goes, our first count was hit here at, I'm using GLD as a proxy for gold. And so GLD hit its first target at 192, and then we have another target that goes up to 240, which is roughly 2400 on gold. And so I think gold is just a proxy for this whole area of the market where these metals are just going higher and higher. And that also fits with accommodative monetary policy and fiscal policy, because the thing that I think we're going to get in 2021 is we're going to get a hot economy. The economy is going to get very strong worldwide. It's going to go up at a blistering pace. I do think that the these materials markets are going to go up with the world economy. I do think the stock market could go up, but at a much slower pace than it did in 2020.
So given all this stimulus and given the fact your charts are telling you this trend has got more time to play out, as an investor, given where we are today, what would you be doing?
Well, I'm thinking as the market's going higher, I don't know that it's appropriate yet to start to reduce holdings in these growth, these real high quality growth names. They continue to act well, but I would be thinking rotation now. And there's rotation in a number of areas that are very attractive. I think, as a matter of fact, there's a chart that I put up in this chart pack of a point and figure of crude oil. And crude oil, which is trading in the low 50s, has a point and figure count that goes $85 to $112. And so crude oil is likely to go higher in over the course of the next year or two. And I believe that this is going to be very supportive for some of the high quality oil and oil equipment names. And these stocks have yield. And so that's an area that I would be looking for rotation. And then also there's other areas of the real economy that I think look fantastic. The auto producers ex Tesla, I wouldn't put Tesla in that group per se, because it's already had a huge run. But they look terrific. The airlines are starting to come alive and coming out of big bases. And so there's a lot of value spots in the market where there's going to be rotation. And we know that money migrates in markets where it's perceived to be working the hardest and has less risk. And so you're not going to see wholesale selling of the growth area of the market, but you're going to have money leaking from growth and migrating over into value and into the real economy.
All right. Well, listen, Bruce, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow the work that you do, tell them how they can follow you.
Well, my blogs are on stockcharts.com and under articles, and it's the Wyckoff Power Charting. And then also I do a video on Stock Charts TV called Power Charting, which all is available for free. And then Also, there's a lot of great content at WyckoffAnalytics.com. And so thank you so much.
Okay. Just as we close, do you think my stops will go off on GameStop?
No, I don't. I think that it's going to stay somewhere between 150 and 500 today.
Okay. Thanks for the tip. Okay.
Thank you, Jim. It's so good to be with you.
This week on FS Insider, we spoke with Neil Shearing at Capital Economics to discuss why we may see the fastest economic rebound on record this year.
If we're right, then the experience of China and others that have gone before in terms of lifting those restrictions suggests that we could be in for quite a sharp rebound in activity as things start to open up.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Are you getting closer to retirement? Do you worry about what retirement will look like? Financial Sense Wealth Management can help put your mind at ease. Our advisors can help customize an individual retirement plan that fits your needs and helps you get on the right track to achieving your retirement goals. We'll show you how to get the most out of your Social Security benefits, make the right decisions on Medicare, reduce taxes, and increase your return on investments so you can relax and enjoy your retirement years. Don't leave your retirement up to chance. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management today at 888-486-3939 or email us at grow@financialsense.com.
Well, there's a new administration in Washington that aims on increasing green energy. But what about the raw materials that go into EVs and other green energy type projects? Well, let's find out where this is going. Joining us on the program is Keith Barron. He's CEO, chairman of Urania Resources. Keith, let's talk about copper, because we're going more towards EVs. You're hearing companies like Volvo now is making all electric cars. You've got Volkswagen by 2027 that's going to be all electric. And we know that the copper that goes into an electric car is four times greater than a gas combustion car. So let's talk about copper, which is really having a nice run here at 363. It's hard to believe that, you know, copper prices were at $2 around this time last year.
Absolutely, Jim. Copper, I think, is almost like the green gold. We're at or close to an eight-year high in the copper price, which is just tremendous. And I think it's going to keep going and going and going. There's a lot of really, really compelling reasons for this, which we can talk about here. And the first one, as you've mentioned, is electric cars, electric vehicles. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the old Ford Mustang. The old Ford Mustang had about 20 kilos of copper in it. And it mostly in the wiring and wiring up to the radiator and such. 20 kilos is roughly, 50, 55 pounds, something like that. And then technology improved, of course, for more environmental friendly vehicles. And if you take the Toyota Prius, which everyone's familiar with, that's got 40 kilos of copper in it. Now, let's switch over to the Tesla 3. Everyone knows about the Tesla 3. That has 109 kilos of copper in it. That's 240 pounds of copper per vehicle. So you see the transition from 20 kilos to 109 kilos in a very short period of time. That is a fivefold increase. It's incredible. And really, this is just the thin edge of the wedge. As you mentioned, Volvo and many, many countries in Europe especially are legislating to do away with the combustion engine in a rather short period of time, actually. We're going to see, I'm calling it the copper renaissance. Copper renaissance, this is tantamount to what happened in America and Western Europe through the 1880s, 1890s, 1900, when households got electrified. when we saw street lamps go on for the very first time. This is what's happening again. It's different circumstances, of course, but it is just as powerful, and it is a major driver. The great, great mining companies, historical mining companies like Kennecott, like Asarco, which was formed by the Guggenheim Company, like Anaconda, which is no longer around. But these things were in their heyday in the 1880s, 1890s, 1900, when the copper demand just shot right through the roof. And of course, it was even greater for the First World War and Second World War. But now we see a situation where copper demand is exploding, and it is a worldwide phenomenon.
So copper is needed in batteries. Let's talk about silver and nickel, because, you know, we saw Elon Musk give a press conference asking mining companies to go out and find nickel. He'll sign a long-term contract. So we have nickel that's used in batteries, but also when you talk about solar, you also use silver. So let's talk about nickel and silver.
Yeah. Well, if I could just backtrack a little bit about Elon Musk, I think that what you're going to see in future here, and maybe in fairly short order, is a situation where companies who manufacture utility companies, car companies, it doesn't really matter, but the end users of copper are going to do offtake agreements with the mining companies to assure that they have supply in the future. This has already been done for years and years in the uranium business. And of course, Elon Musk has mentioned it recently for nickel, but I think you're going to see it coming for copper. Now, nickel and silver, I know a lot more about silver than I know about nickel because of silver's a precious metal, and I've been following the price and the development of the silver business for decades and decades. Silver shares a lot of properties with copper. So, you know, with this electrification, silver is actually a better conductor of electricity than copper. But, of course, the price makes it unattractive to be using in power lines. We're not going to see that. But it does share a lot of the same properties. In the past, everyone's been looking now for cheaper alternatives to silver being used in circuit boards. And, you know, in the old days, you could use lead solder to wire circuits together. That is very, very much frowned upon these days because the lead ends up in the environment or can end up in the environment if it's not recycled properly. But silver is superior, of course, in the conduction of electricity. So it's used in that case. But the big one is solar panels. And the silver in the panel, it gives the reflection effect, kind of like the mirror effect, as far as I understand it. And I'm not an expert on this thing by any means. Of course, if you look at the numbers for silver consumption from 2020, everything's kind of messed up because of the COVID virus. But if you look at 2019, fully 10% of the demand worldwide for silver, 10% of mined silver was used in production of solar cells. That is an incredible number. So as solar energy explodes across the earth, as it is doing now, there will be greater and greater and greater demand for silver. The industry is looking very, very hard for cheaper alternatives. Maybe germanium is the answer. Nobody really knows yet. There's a lot of stuff that's in development. But what we know today is that we cannot do without silver. And I just want to put, I want to raise awareness of one other thing that a lot of people don't appreciate, but this is very, very important for the the properties of both silver and copper metal. Both of them are bactericides. Both of them will kill bacteria on contact. And they kill viruses too. Not as effective with viruses as bacteria, but certainly fantastic results. I've actually got a pair of socks at home that I use for skiing, and they are impregnated with copper thread. And the reason for that is so that the socks don't go smelly on me because it kills bacteria on contact. It's a fabulous thing. And people have done, there have been a lot of studies done with hospital gowns, with pajamas, sewing a little bit of silver thread into them really, really cuts down on the infection rate and the spreading of infections in hospitals and nursing homes. You have it. So this is another incredible property of these two metals.
Well, I wear a copper infused mask, face mask, for that very reason. Let me take this even a step further. So if we're going to EVs, we're going to this green economy. What also changes, Keith, is when I come home from work or going someplace, I park my car in the garage. It's a gasoline engine. It doesn't require any power. I turn the engine off. If I have a electrical car, when I'm pulling my car into the garage for the evening, I'm plugging it into the grid to recharge the batteries. So let's talk about electrical power in copper as well. So it's not just that you're putting it in batteries on the cars that you're making, but you also have to have an electrical grid system that's going to power these electric cars.
That's absolutely true, Jim. And just think of the number of charging stations that have to be put in just around the U.S. It's an incredibly huge number, and the cabling, all these things have to be linked together to the grid. And they do that with copper wire. Now, people in the past have tried to use aluminum, but aluminum can't bear a high load, and it will burst into flames. It will just catch on fire. Copper, you don't have that problem. Copper, you put a huge amount of amps through it, and it will just melt, but it doesn't cause fires. Usually, it just gets a little bit hot. But in any case, copper is just an incredible conductor of energy, and you know, and the never mind the copper in engines for electric cars and that. Just think of the cabling that has to be put in the U.S. Really, the entire grid. The grid dates from the first copper renaissance, from the 1880s, 1890s, 1900s. There's a lot of cables out there that are 100, 110, 115 years old. They all have to be replaced. Everything has to go, and it has to be replaced by new, robust cabling that will handle the load to take the electricity from, let's say it's from solar power, from wind farms, has to take it to the consumer in the suburbs. So there's a tremendous use here in just copper wiring. And think about another thing here. Like nobody, the NIMBYs don't want to have a solar farm in their backyards. Neither do they want an electric turbine turning in their front yard. These things are typically in very remote areas. They're out in the countryside, or they're offshore, and because of that, to connect them to the grid, you're going to have to run a lot of copper wire. So, as I've said, this is it's unprecedented. You've got to go right back to Thomas Edison in the 1880s. He actually, it was 1882, as a bit of a stunt. He lit up a city block in Lower Manhattan, down around Pearl Street, which is near Wall Street. And that was the first electrification on a fairly modest scale, but people saw what was going on and they wanted the product, and Electric Light just took off from there. That was the first copper renaissance. What we're doing now is the second copper renaissance, in my opinion.
Keith, in addition to that in construction, copper has normally been associated with construction, copper pipes. We're also talking about expanding infrastructure. Let's go over to the supply side. So we have growing demand with EVs. We have growing demand because of green energy. What about the supply front? It's my understanding we're running copper deficits now.
Yes, we are. If we're not actually running a deficit today, it's very close. It was forecasted to happen last year, but because of the COVID and the lack of industrial activity, copper use dropped. But China, of course, we all know is back to work, and they're back. They are the main consumer of copper. So the usage is back up there. And that's reflected in the price. And we've seen the price, as I said, it's at an 8-year high right now. And there's a reason for that. And that is because the supply is constricted. There is not a lot of copper, new copper coming on stream. Some of the oldest mines, like Chuquicamata in Chile and Grasberg in Papua New Guinea, are transitioning to underground operations, so their production profile is a little bit lower. But, you know, for the entire industry, we're looking at an average of about 0.7% copper in the ore that's being produced. And that is the lowest that it's ever been. There are a couple of mines in Canada that can work, around point even down to 0.3%. But going lower than that, you can't just make any money. And not at these prices. The prices would have to double, triple, quadruple, and maybe that's where we're headed. But as you know very, very well, Jim, it takes a heck of a long time for a new mine to get permitted, on average 15 years. I actually think in a lot of places like the U.S. that's being very, very optimistic. We saw the Pebble mine up in Alaska, which is potentially the world's largest unmined copper deposit right now, being given a rough ride by the last presidential regime, and it looks like Biden is going to kill it, and maybe kill it for good. Who knows? We'll see what happens. Many, many things unfolding right now. But Biden certainly is talking green energy. He's talking green energy initiatives. He's talking about spending a ton of money on green infrastructure. You know, we're going to see a lot of copper use there.
So finally, let's touch upon an area that has investor interest, and that's been gold itself. We've got a budget deficit last year. Trump, his last year in office, ran up a budget deficit because of COVID, $3.1 trillion. If we take a look at, we just passed a $900 billion stimulus in December. They're talking about an additional $1.9 trillion stimulus coming in March, and then on top of that, $2 trillion for infrastructure. So the U.S. could be looking at anywhere from three, probably at that level, $5 trillion, and our debt levels are approaching maximum levels here very quickly. Let's talk about gold and how gold operates in an environment like this, because, Keith, when the Fed was printing money with the financial crisis, a lot of that stayed on the balance sheet of the Fed. Banks were paid interest. The Fed start paying. So it didn't work its way in the economy. If you contrast that today, the government is putting money directly into the economy, with the Fed now coming in and mopping it up by QE. So contrast that in the prospects for inflation and gold.
Well, you know, the singer Al Jolson used to say, "Folks, you ain't seen nothing yet." And this is what's coming, because certainly the platform that President Biden was elected on was to spend, and spend even more. So they're taking their feet fully off the brake, and we're going to see an incredible amount, a flood of liquidity, and that is what's driving the stock markets right now. And so we're seeing incredible valuations on stocks. I mean, you mentioned Tesla earlier, and that's one of the darlings right now. In fact, I was looking at the Financial Times today, and one of the investment groups has come up with something they call the Ludicrous Index. And these are just companies that are so incredibly valued over their earnings, or they have no earnings at all. And, you know, there's a lot of fear out there that there's actually a bubble that's coming from all this. I see it in equities. I see it in Bitcoin. And, you know, gold, I think, is poised to do extremely well in this environment. It's not doing as well right now. It's kind of holding its own and kind of going sideways. But obviously, all of this stimulus is very, very inflationary. And whenever there's been high inflation, there's been a rush to hard assets, including gold, historically. And you know, the U.S. and Western Europe and all the other countries of the world that are engaging in this huge orgy of money printing are not going to escape this ultimate fate. And so, you know, at some point you will see a turn in things like Bitcoin. I don't know what's going to cause it. It might be a hacking event. Who knows? You will see a turn, I think, eventually in the stock market. And the plunge could be quite dramatic. It's really getting and looking like the roaring 1920s and being compared with that. And maybe we're coming up to 1929 at some point. But just remember that all through the Great Depression, some of the best performing companies were gold companies. For instance, Homestake Mining in the U.S. did very, very well all through the Depression in the U.S. And that was one of the go-to stocks. I think, you know, companies that have been around and weathered the storm for many, many years, maybe even centuries, like over a century, like Coca-Cola, those things are going to survive. Are a lot of the flavor of the month tech companies and things like that going to survive? I just don't know. But I think that everyone should have some gold, preferably some physical gold, as protection against potential disaster here. And this disaster is being, you know, they have no idea what's going to happen here. There is no precedent in the history of economics where we've seen such money printing. It is even going and surpassing what happened in the Weimar Republic in 1922 and 1923. So we are in uncharted territory, and as I said, you ain't seen nothing, folks.
Keith, as we close, tell our listeners about the company that you chair, Aurania Resources, and how they can find out information.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim. I'm actually speaking to you from Southern Ecuador, where I'm working on the project here. Aurania, the company that I'm chair and CEO of, is engaged in copper. That's why it's one of my favorite metals right now, copper, gold, and silver exploration down in the jungles of Ecuador and Peru. And you can find more information about me and the companies at www.aurania.com. That's spelled A-U-R-A-N-I-A.
All right. Well, listen, Keith, thanks for coming on the program. Stay safe, my friend, and we'll talk to you again.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.